Happy Wednesday evening, everybody. This is Howie Hinden with another AAPMD webinar. And we've had a busy week. We had an AAPMD liaison webinar last night and then Denver meeting on Monday night. There's just so much activity. And tonight we have something very new and special. And our co-host, who is there almost every time, one of our co-hosts, Pat McBride, is our presenter tonight. So Steve Carstensen has agreed to act as a co-host. And what we've done is we've created another section for the AAPMD called the Social Justice Section. And I'm wondering if all the people who have signed up tonight really know why they signed up or what they're here, or did they just come to every webinar we do anyway. But we think it's very important that if you have a successful airway sleep practice and you're really making a difference in people's lives, that anybody and everybody who has a problem should have some access to care. And there are people in our practices, in our community, who are underserved or uninformed. And this webinar is about how do we reach those people, who are those people, and what can we do to help them. So this is the first of what we hope will be regular webinars about these issues. And I'm going to do a little poll later to see whether this resonates with you. And we want this to be, as usual, an interactive webinar. And especially tonight, tell us what you think. Is it something that you would do? Are you interested in reaching out to your community? Think about how you feel about it now. Think about how you feel about it at the end of our session. It might be different. So the underserved, uninformed, there are so many people. I'm going to let Pat tell you about that later. But as our webinar progresses, think about who you know, friends, family, people in your practice or people in your neighborhood who may be in need of care and they just can't get it. So very quickly, rest of April, next week, we have a webinar with Gerald Simmons, MD, neurologist, AAPMD board member. There is no panacea for treating the upper airway and new approaches to managing OSA. And every month, Jerry comes up with new and exciting things. And I'm sure he's going to have really interesting things to share with us. Then we have a great special Endeavor webinar on April 11th. With Kevin Boyd and Robert Lustig. If you've never heard Robert Lustig before, he is fantastic. And they're going to be talking about the dental medical connection, nutrition, caries, and airway. So think about joining us. Actually, don't think about it. Just join us. April 13th, Bill Hang, Airway and Orthodontics, past, present, and future. And then April 20th is somebody I just met at the recent AAPMD conference. Steve, you know Richard Seymour?
I don't, but I love this title.
I do. He's great.
He's he kept following me around with a book and hitting me with the book thing.
Yeah.
I have this this webinar, and he's been he sort of retired now, and he wrote a book about how so many women are treated for other things when they really have a TMJ problem. Nobody recognizes it. And this is really what we all talk about. We talk about whether it's an airway problem or TMJ problem. It's not recognized, and people go off on all these tangents and get other treatment. So I think it's going to be very interesting. He's certainly an unusual person. So I haven't heard him, but I did read his book. I get to read a lot of books when I'm looking for people to do webinars. We have 144 webinars in our AAPMD library now, and if you are an AAPMD member, you have access to all of them anytime you want them, as often as you want them. If you're not an AAPMD member, God, I don't, can't even conceive why you're not. Please join us. We have, as of today, we have 868 members in the AAPMD, and it's my goal to reach 1,000 by the end of the year. So if a couple of you will join us, it'll help us get closer to the goal. September 15th and 18th, the Collaboration Cures meeting. The program is up on the website now, so go and look at the program. What's the unique and new, we have wonderful, our program directors and chairman are here tonight, Pat McBride and Steve Crossenson. Great program. We know it's going to sell out. We have breakout sessions. And if you want to go to the breakout session of your choice, you better sign up early because it's going to be first come, first serve. So don't miss out on the breakout session of your choice. I mean, it's not so terrible, the second and third or fourth choice. There are no bad choices. But if you want to go to hear somebody in particular, make sure you sign up. And if you sign up before April 1st, you'll even get a discount on the fee. And here's just some of our exciting lineup. Our keynotes are great. You can read more about it on the website. I'm not going to take time to go over that. And then I just want our Sunday celebration is going to be a celebration of the 10th anniversary of the AAPMD. Patty Gindo said, we must have a party to celebrate that. And we're going to talk about collaboration careers, past, present, and future. We're going to have speakers who represent the very beginnings of the AAPMD, where we are now, and a lot of exciting things about where we go in the future. And another of the brainchilds of Pat and Steve is the university. And I don't know whether every time I do a webinar, the building is coming together a little bit more. There are new additions being added. They put new windows on, so it's getting closer to being finished. And so Pat usually does the introductions, but I will introduce her, but I'm not going to read her bio, but I will tell you, I couldn't conceive of running an organization without Pat on my board. A little bit about her background. She was married to an early dentist who was a very early adapter of sleep medicine. And then, unfortunately, he passed away at an early age, and Pat was left not being a doctor, just being an incredibly bright person, knew a lot, but you needed to have a title in order to go with that knowledge. And she helped people run their practice. She helped people make their practices better. And then she went back to school, got a PhD, raised the kids, has done so much. And she always is there for me, doing whatever I need, whenever I need to do it. So we were talking about airway and access for all. And it has to be a way that anybody who has a problem can get access to some kind of care. And I said, we need to create a section that has to deal with these specific problems. And the question is, will people be interested? You're running a practice. You want to know how to make your practice better, be more successful, make more money. But I believe in everybody's heart and soul, there's a part of them that wants to participate and do something to make the world better. Not to change the whole world. Do something to make one person better at a time. So I want you to listen to this webinar. Hear what Pat has to say. Think about what you would do to participate and give something back to your community. I mean, I have been blessed. I live better than 99% of the people in the world. And I am grateful. I know Pat gives a lot back. So does Steve. We have a wonderful guest who's another board member, Phil Cooper, who works tirelessly in order to try to help his population down in Savannah, Georgia. That's why we asked him to be here. So listen, think about it, and please put your comments in the chat box so we know if this project that we're starting is worthwhile. Pat, I'm gonna put on your presentation because I'm in charge here.
And I want to say before we start, what I would love to see, thank you. There's so many people that are already so excited to hear this message that are putting messages in our chat box already. And so what I would challenge you guys on the call to do is, as you listen to this, what's going to be inspiring, I've seen the slides, guys, I know Pat, what's going to be inspiring tonight is put an idea that you have in the chat box. Put an idea up that people can see. And, you know, just if it's a thought, I'm not asking you to make a commitment. I hope you do. But just put an idea up, because your idea may resonate with somebody else's idea. So as you don't have to be a question. Just put an idea in there. Anytime, anything you hear, type in an idea.
Hey, Pat.
We're ready to go. So can I forward this myself, or do I need you to, Howie?
Yeah, if you go down and you scroll down.
Scroll down.
You got the forward button, which is right next to 242.
Got it.
Okay.
Got it. Okay. So
want to go back to the beginning?
I'm ready. So,
go ahead.
All righty. Thank you. So thank you, everybody, for coming tonight. I know that this is notoriously a topic that people don't want to really spend a lot of time talking about. But in my world, where I live, this is just part of the view. This is the view from where I sit. And what I think is really important to the message I want to send out to you tonight is that I really believe that every one single person on here and everyone around us that we work with and we live with can do a very small thing in their lives that doesn't upset their apple cart, that doesn't make their whole practice flip over on its side or anything like that. We can make one small change that's going to affect a family, an individual, part of our community, that's going to reap benefits elsewhere as that person moves forward and the trajectory of their life improves overall. So that's what I want to say is this. I'm very excited to be bringing you some of this information. So all healthcare, as far as I'm concerned, we always say in the ideal world that healthcare and dentistry, it should be safe, it should be effective, it should always be patient-centric. In other words, the patient is at the center. The individual is not an algorithm. They are a person, and there is a person attached to each and every disorder that we see. And we don't need to treat the disorder. We need to treat the patient. Then it also needs to be timely and efficient, which during COVID, we got none of that. And we also need to know that it has to be equitable and accessible. And those are things that we just take for granted happen in our society. And actually, it really doesn't. And it doesn't in a big way. And I just want to tell you some of the things that we see that you probably don't even notice are out there. But the truth of it is inequality is worse and worse in terms of world populations, not just in the United States, and fewer people are actually aware of it. We live in our confined societies, kind of sealed in our bubbles, and our bubbles are even smaller because of COVID. And so, you know, awareness, our own awareness and awareness of those around us is almost as important as the need to quote unquote do something. So I think what's really interesting is that for all of us, for every individual in our American society, people who get a good education, get that four-year college degree, actually live longer. So have the potential to serve society, serve their families, and actually be in a different place than other people would expect them to be. These aren't going very quickly there. So the questions we're going to ask tonight very quickly and simply are, it's the where, what, and who. Who are the individuals that we actually are talking about as underserved, marginalized populations? And how about vulnerable populations? Because they're not one and the same. And they're perceived differently by practitioners, by society as a whole, and also by the individuals themselves. So we want to make sure that we understand that a vulnerable population is actually maybe underserved or not. An underserved population may not necessarily be perceived as vulnerable when they look at themselves, but perceived as vulnerable by the people on the outside looking in. But all of it intersects in a meaningful way. And so sometimes we think, oh, that person looks like they're okay. They can afford treatment, this and that, and the next thing. You don't know. You can't possibly project your sociological thought process. You can't, where you're from, what you, how you look at things, all of your own preconceptions about who and what the world is, the paradigm that you live in, we can't deem to presume that others understand it. This is probably my wordiest slide of all. And it's, and people who know me and who've listened to me lecture are like, so what is she talking about? All I see are pictures. But a picture can tell a million words. But these are just some of the accessing of how do we access care and what are barriers? Some of these barriers we don't even think about. We don't see them. They're, it's just, yeah, okay, fine. And we move on. So I want to get into that just a little bit more in a meaningful way for those of us who treat patients day in and day out. So access to care is, how available is it? Do we talk about people that usually drove to their appointment no longer may be able to? Health, infirmity, inability to see, loss of their car. We actually had a cancellation of a patient for their surgery for tomorrow afternoon because they come from 7 hours away and they can't afford the gas. It's $7 a gallon in California right now, right where I live. It's very expensive. So accessibility, this is somebody who drove everywhere they wanted to before, but now all of a sudden they've slotted into a new category. So we want to realize all of these things are there, but that we're not seeing them. So this is a fabulous book. And if you can get it on Amazon, I think it's like $4 or $5. It's not very expensive. But how cool is it if we can ensure all the county residents in our own demographic can access medical and dental care. And this is not us doing it. This is us providing a resource and understanding what's in our own community and how we can find out so that should we not be in a position where we could, so that we could treat this person or we have the knowledge and the skill to treat a certain individual, we may be able to get information from our county in a meaningful way that will allow us to get that patient and have a resource available for them that's seriously going to impact their ability to access services, get quality care, and have a meaningful outcome. So populations experiencing vulnerabilities are unseen, unheard, and for the most part, very misunderstood. So, and when we're looking at these groups of people, sometimes it's very obvious to our eyes of who are these folks and what's happening to them. And when I think about what's going on with the people in our populations that we're serving, that we have to look at racial and ethnic minorities, that's an obvious one. Children, of course, we talk a lot about it in Endeavor. We talk a lot about it in AAPMD, and we also talk a lot about it in the AASM. I'm involved with children very heavily and also involved with the Downs community. So children with all kinds of disabilities, people with disabilities, either intellectual or physical or otherwise. And then you also have older adults, you know, the very older adults, the very young adults, the people who live on the fringe of society. Obviously, the pregnant mom is a person of great interest to all of us. And people in communities that maybe are not considered mainstream to a point, and yet perceived judgments by society and by care providers may keep those people from seeking treatment and or getting treatment regardless of their ability to pay. And that's a big one. We also have marginalized populations. Who are they? Well, if you live 7.5 hours away from your nearest trauma center, you're going to have a hard time getting there. Your heart attack will be over by the time somebody gets you there. People who live, they're also underserved patients. We are looking at urban. How about urban? So this, if you see here, I don't know if my pointer is working. This on-ramp, it's right by my house. This is right by my house. This is the freeway on-ramp at the BART station right there on College Avenue. Steve and I have driven right by it together. And this is where a lot of folks live in my neighborhood. So this is real. This is where all of us live, and this is the world that we live in. So, and most of these people don't have insurance, but an underserved and a marginalized population is also people who can't get where they're going because logistics matter. Storms, weather. We have people, when the storms are out and the power is out here and somebody calls and says they can't get into their appointment, everybody on the receiving end of the line gets upset because that hygiene slot or that consultation for their sleep appointment is lost live. This is, and much more so before virtual medicine came into being, but those appointments were lost and ergo the providers felt like they were getting stiffed. And now we realize that the reality of the world we live in is we've got wildfires. We have people being displaced each and every summer from large areas in the country by tornadoes and fires and water. And we're understanding that people that had beautiful homes and affluent neighborhoods are now living in tent cities for parts of the year because they can't access their homes. If you can't access your home, you obviously can't access your healthcare to a large degree. One of the things we need to talk about is the providers ourselves. So when lots of us were in your medical school, dental school, whatever, there you are incentivized to go and work in underserved areas on reservations. For instance, my nephew went all the way through medical school. If he signed on the dotted line to go and work on a reservation, he was there for 4 years. And as soon as his quote unquote term was up, he was out of there. Big mistake that we make is parachuting care into areas and cultures where we don't understand what's going on. We don't connect with the people because we don't actually live there. Part of what I've said throughout my entire career is I serve the people in the community, but they have to see me in the grocery store. They have to see me walk my dog. And I have to be part and parcel of the community from whence I live. Yeah, it means my car's been stolen. Yes, my house has been broken into. Uh-huh. But I live in the community I serve. And it's a choice that I make. I don't have to make this choice, but I do it because it allows me to do one thing that gives the people I work with and myself a level of credibility and trust with the people that we serve. So one of the things at the end I'm going to talk about is how can we, as providers and people who are dealing with upcoming students, how do we recognize these young folks that are from these areas? How do we get to know who they are and see that they really want to do something with their lives and help them get the education, help them get the advanced education and everything that they need so that they can come home to the community that they love, that they grew up with, and serve where it's home. That's something that's super important. That's a big piece of this puzzle because so many parts of the country are very underserved. Part of the underserved people that we kind of don't remember about are people with what we call IDDs. They're either intellectual disabilities, physical disabilities. There's a lot of exclusion that goes in there, but part of that also includes high-functioning folks with autism, high-functioning Down syndrome individuals, high-functioning alcoholics and drug addicts. They're part of a marginalized system because the minute they go, a lot of them try and receive care. They either work at jobs that are underinsured or don't have insurance, or they feel judged. And so they have a hesitancy to seek care when they should be able to walk in the door like everybody else. Nobody should care. But that's not necessarily the case depending on where you are in the country. It's just something to keep in mind that of the people that we, as we walk down the street and we take a look. So there is this dental medical connection that is becoming absolutely so much more important. The communication between primary care physicians, sleep medicine doctors, the dental team, the oral surgeon team, the person who may be able to find a way for a child who or a young adult or somebody whose airway is just needs to be surgically corrected. There's a way. It's not only fee for service. There is a way to find a pathway for a patient and change the trajectory of their life, but it takes a village. The myofunctional therapists, the nutritionists, the nurse in the school, the teachers, all of these people are part of the care team, whether we like it or not, or whether we understand that all they need to do is have somebody reach out to them and say, you are such a valuable member that would you be willing to partner with me? If you have kids in your class that you see that perhaps could use some other intervention or need something you're not going to diagnose anything, but you're going to tell us that maybe we should come to you and do some sort of a parent night teacher education so that maybe we can start people thinking and then provide resources. Also a very important thing. So the dental connection, that's one of the, I have a couple of statistics here that I popped out that I wanted to have here. And since I can't see my notes on here, pardon me from doing this. We all know this, and I just think it's incredible. 47% of all adults greater than 30 years old have perio. So the dental connection is there. 9 out of 10 adults, 20 to 64, have active caries. Active caries that is not being treated. And interestingly enough, that's the same statistic from 20 years ago. It has not budged up or down. It's the same statistic. And pediatric caries and permanent teeth is actually ranked as one of the most important and common health childhood diseases there is. Pediatric caries and permanent teeth. We all know, Phil knows, he's treating a caries war. They won't even give him time to assess airway on some of these kids. Why? Simply because he's busy fighting a fire with, you know, an eyedropper of water. And that's the community that he's in. And it's the community of a lot of folks. Sleep disorders. We know that here is this myriad of sleep disorders that we all know all about from having read countless sleep books. We have attended many lectures. We know that all of these things are affecting not only adults, but children and across the entire spectrum of the population. We can't say just because you're poor, you have this, just because you are disenfranchised, you have this, and just because you're rich, you maybe can get rid of this. We can't do that. Everybody just has it. It's, you know, Dr. Capasso, who I work with at Stanford day in and day out, he says, everybody snores. At some point, everybody snores. Everybody has a breathing disease. Just get over it. Get them in here and let's rotate them through. It's just like, this is something everybody has. It's an epidemic. Caries is an epidemic. We know that bad nutrition is an epidemic, that we can't take on the food system. Bless Robert Lustig. You can't take it all on by yourself. But what you can do is get enough information so you can help people make choices that they don't know anything about. One of my favorite people in the world that's going to be part of the university, that this woman has something like 200 publications on sleep health disparities, implications of healthcare disparities across the spectrum with an emphasis on cancer and cardiac. And I will tell you that if you have Google Scholar or PubMed or something, go in and look at some of her stuff because she's an amazing individual and they've done some great things out of Emory University and given us information that we can arm ourselves with. And this is just some of this kind of stuff that they do. Social determinants. We're talking about sleep, the role of sleep and disparities, okay? Your job has a lot to do with how well you sleep. The jobs of the white-collar worker and their ability to sleep given appropriate sleep times and given the right environment and all of those things, that is one part of society and how they deal with sleep. The person who is working 2 to 3 jobs and is working a split shift, a swing shift, numerous hours, I know how I feel after I've worked 4 17s in a week. And I've done it. And it's not fun because even though you sleep your 7 or 8 hours, your brain is not fully rested. So think of millions of people that are on assembly lines that are impaired because they're sleep deprived. And it's also causing all of these other cardiovascular, hypertension, you know, glycemic issues, inflammatory processes. They are not being addressed simply because of access to care and an awareness that just is not there that this is happening. So I need to preface that, for I just threw the entire laundry list at you and the kitchen sink. I need to preface that we're all sitting here going, okay, our hair's been blown back. There's a lot of stuff here. I don't expect anybody to save the world. None of us can do that. And none of us are expected to. I just want to open your mind so that perhaps you can make a choice about what you may or may not do, what you may or may not offer, and how a single drop of rain that starts in the sky will eventually roll down into the sea. And when it does, it adds to everything else and it becomes the ocean. And that's how we change policy. That's how we make the bigger picture shift, because right now we are trying to turn a cruise ship around in the middle of the Panama Canal, and it's pretty tough. Percentages of state population living in debt shortages. So you can look, the worst areas are lots of rural areas, but surprisingly enough, there are some high-powered cities here that don't have enough doctors and dentists. Lots of states that have plenty of care providers, but then again, not enough care providers. So it's surprising. Don't take for granted that there's enough care providers. And especially when we're dealing with children and pediatric sleep disorders, we're talking about 50 states plus the, you know, we've got other areas that are territories, and we have exactly 390 board-certified sleep physicians for children. Okay, it's a lot of ground for those folks to cover. So we all know that COVID is part of our life. We are living with it. It's endemic at this point. It's just going to be the next thing that comes along. They're just going to, every year, like the flu shot, we're going to be chasing the last whatever flu was that they didn't put in this year's shot. It's going to go into next year's shot. And the next wave of COVID is just going to continue to endemically go out there. We're going to adjust and move on. But all I know is that we are treating people day in, day out with poor oral health, poor sleep health, and they all are at much greater risk of getting COVID-19 and or dying from it. Now, we are also seeing higher percentages of fully vaccinated and boosted folks who have comorbid diseases getting COVID, but they're not dying from it or ending up on a vent. So we have to make decisions based on what's best for the population, understanding that it's a super political hot potato, but we have to know that if somebody has a history of COVID, they may present with more cardiovascular disease, with COVID long-lasting symptoms, and it's really difficult if you're trying to treat people out there and there's no way that you can if they have other longitudinal type problems. So this is, we've all been there. I don't know any of you who haven't. And if you haven't been in here, this was my life for the first 10 years of our practice. They just lined people up. This is a system that was created in the 70s. And that was a way that we, quote unquote, soothed our consciences, and we provided public care. And it was a 2-day event once a month. And we did as many folks as we could get through as possible. But that system needs to change simply because we're living in a COVID world and this is not appropriate anymore. So we also know respondents for dental care, medical care, picking up their drugs, getting their eyeglasses, and mental health care, these people by age group are just not getting care based on the fact that they can't afford it. Even with insurance, if the copays are too high, then they can't get the care. So that limits access to care. And it's not just people who can't afford to pay. So Dr. Cooper, again, another person I want you to look forward to seeing in the future. One of my favorite lines is, you'll not change everything you face, but you must face everything in order to change. Phil says this. Phil lives this. And this is why it's important to have people like him around to help us bring awareness to all communities, regardless of where we are in the country. His Midnight Basketball League is starting up here in Oakland, and I plan to be one of the little kids' coaches. We may not win, but we'll have fun. So these are statistics that come out of Pew. When I was working on my PhD and my postdoc, Pew was like my favorite place to go. And Pew is wonderful because they don't care what you think. They don't care. They're just going to give you the stats. They're going to tell you like it is, deal with it. And so I think it's amazing when they talk about the prevalence of children with color. They see a dentist less often, get fewer preventive services. Then we have children of color get sealants on their permanent teeth. This should be every child who breathes should get permanent sealants on their teeth. I don't care how we get it done.
Hey, Pat, do we want to hear from Phil now, or you want to wait till you finish your presentation?
It's up to Phil.
What works for you?
It's up to Phil. Whatever he can jump in anytime he wants.
Phil, did your audio work?
Yeah, you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just want to say... I met Phil when we were starting the APMD, like a little bit more than 10 years ago. And, I, you know, he introduced me to the problems he was having. And he said, well, you know, this is great because we have the answer to so many problems. We're going to change the world. But there is so much resistance. One thought just came to my mind. Remember, Phil, we did a meeting in Savannah. Steve Sheldon was there. And it was to the teachers of Savannah. And the thing that always impressed me, the teacher said, I'm afraid if I identify somebody with an airway problem, I'm afraid I'll get into trouble. It's going to become the school's problem. And I could lose my job possibly. So Phil is going to be part of this section, and he's going to offer a lot of sage advice and experience. So just in a few words, and we'll continue the discussion later, tell us about some of the issues that you're facing in your community.
First of all, thank you guys for inviting me to participate this evening. Listening to Pat always throws me off because she does everything, or she says everything I would like to say in that fashion. But at this point in time, half of my practice, I won't say half the practice, but half the time, I'm working at the Curtis B. Cooper Health Center here in Savannah. Now, Curtis B. Cooper is not a relative. He started the Curtis B. Center in an underserved and healthcare desert about 15, 20 years ago. I see patients in that clinic daily that are underserved. They're there because they have a sliding scale as far as payment is concerned. Many of them do not have the funding to get the dental work done, but the healthcare is a pretty good measure of opportunity for them to get that kind of health care. But Howie, going back to where we really started, I get a lot of pushback even in the center. The center directors are a little hesitant because if I start talking about airway or sleep disorder conditions, oh, that's research. That's not what we do here. And that's a battle I'm really fighting at this point in time. So we are back in that same situation of having to deal with medical professionals that really don't understand the collaboration between healthcare, between medical and dental issues. It's a battle even to this day, Howard, you know, from that first lecture that you heard back at NYU 10 years ago. I'm still facing a lot of that because a lot of the medical doctors still think it's just, oh, okay, well, they'll be fine. I can get a patient today that has an airway issue and a problem, I'll send them back to the primary care physician, and that physician says, oh, yes, that's an airway, let's get it done. 2 days later, I'll get two or three kids from the same doctor, and he hasn't made the referral. So the battle is still there. The opportunity is still there to try to maintain that kind of healthcare push. I've done lectures for a group called Parent University, where we're trying to educate parents to start looking at kids and understanding, you know, why is this kid off the chain all the time? Why is this kid so hyper? Well, why he just won't keep still? Well, most of those individuals at Parent University are grandparents. So we have an educational drop down. We have to start from the parent, then to the kid. A lot of times now, because we have so many grandparents taking care of kids, it's another battle because now you have older individuals who they're just not sure about it either because they're from the old school. They do it the old way. So I'm also working with a group down in South Georgia. And Pat, that map you showed about the lack of care in percentages in certain areas. I think I saw Georgia has a 10% lack of, what was it, 10% for healthcare professionals in Georgia. They're that low. But down in Ocilla, Florida, there's a group that built a clinic down there. So I'm kind of working with them too. But we're looking at a lot of ways to try to have some ability to change policy. These healthcare systems are doing fine to a certain extent, but they're not doing a good job in terms of addressing many of the comorbidities and difficulties that kids have. In the book I wrote, Why African-American Children Cannot Read.
Yeah. And hey, Pat, can you go back to slide so that shows the cover of his book?
Yeah, basically, that book was written back in 2009. And the reason I basically wrote the book is because I realized that children between the ages of 2 and 5, or 3 and 5, are not being diagnosed with the sleep disorders and or issues that they have, because that is the time the brain develops the newer cognitive system for reading comprehension. So these kids are not enabled, and they're not IED, they don't need IEDs. They need to be understood that they have medical issues that can be addressed. So again, here we are trying to change policy, but changing policy means changing the understanding of what they're looking at more than just changing the policy. And as you said, Pat, you can't change everything you face, but you must face, you know, you must face everything in order to change. And that is what we're doing on a day-to-day basis here. I noticed we had a someone typed in a response a little while ago, said they're in Haiti and they need help. It's mirrored across this country and it's mirrored across this world. So again, all of this is a short notice for me. I'm still in my work clothes, Howie, but we're still gonna make this thing work. It's been a pleasure working with you for the last 12 years. For those of you who have not or are not members of AAPMD, you should join AAPMD because we need all the assistance we can get. And plus, you'll have a lot of the knowledge based on the information that's being provided through AAPMD.
So there's one thing I want to share with everybody about nasal breathing and what you bring up in your book, but I'm going to do it at the end of Pat's presentation. So let's get through the rest of the presentation and let's see if we can have a really great open interactive dialogue at the end. All right, Pat?
That sounds great. Thanks, Phil, so much. We are always so much on the same page. So it's always fun to hear what you have to say. Again, these are just statistics to just kind of get your eyes open to what's going on. So we're not just talking about black and white children. We're talking about brown children, yellow children, adults of all colors and creeds, people coming in from other countries that have been come here as refugees. All of these kind of factor into a lot of these statistics. But we know that if they're in underserved areas, places like Native American reservations and or way up in Alaska, I can tell you it's really a difficult situation to try and get care for adults as well as children. But we see that the children suffer unnecessarily. Interestingly enough, this is not a new statistic that people of color are less likely to keep all of their teeth. And we all know this is a very low. The AASM puts this out and says 22 million Americans have OSA. My guess, it's more like 42 million Americans have OSA to some degree, including upper airway resistance and all kinds of things. And yes, 80 to 90% of them are undiagnosed. So part of our charge here is, how do we step across these lines that are painted in the sand in some areas that you can't cross this line if you're a dentist, you don't want to cross that line if you're a physician, that to be able to recognize that this is in front of us and find a meaningful way to make sense of it in our own demographic. You folks are on here from all around the world. The demographics that you serve are very different than New York for Howie, Oakland, California for me, and for Atlanta, Georgia for Phil, and Steve up in Seattle. It's a very different. The global pandemic, we can see in terms of each country, we look at the risk factors for sleep apnea, and they just go up and up with every year and more in each country. The more developed a country gets, the higher their rates of incidences of caries, of periodontal disease, of cardiovascular disease, heart attack, stroke, and sleep apnea. It has to do with industrialization, bringing in the food, all of those things. But what can we do? Well, I kind of think in many ways, our social system has hit the bottom. So the only place we can go up is up. The only place we can go is up. And the small changes that each and every one of us make we're going to sow the seeds of the future, and we can create systemic change. So the slides are available later if you want to really look at them in detail. But how do we sow the seeds of systemic change? It takes a long time, but if enough people do it, it becomes a movement so that what once was on the outskirts and considered crazy is now part of the norm. And it takes a long time, but if enough people do it and make small changes in their own practices, then we're going to make big practices moving for changes in practices and in the culture moving forward. So I think I started at the beginning with the ripple effect, and I kind of want to come back around to that, go full circle, is you don't have to start at the top. Because if you do, you're going to be frustrated. You're going to be overwhelmed. You're going to say, there is no way I can do this. I think my mind will blow off. And I feel so inadequate. I just feel so inadequate. I'm dealing with staff. I'm dealing with PPE. I'm dealing with scheduling. I'm dealing with student loans and all of those things. Stop. It's what I tell my patients before they go to bed. You don't, Friday night at 4 o'clock is not when you open the envelope from the IRS. Why? Because nobody can help you till Monday. Don't look at it. Stop. Turn your brain off at the end of the day and start again tomorrow and think of one thing you can do. You won't always be successful, but I'm going to talk to you a little bit about some of the things you might have thought, not thought about that you can do. Okay, we all have this, the excuses. We all know what they are. I would, but I don't have time. I don't have the money. I'm not getting reimbursed. I can't get that additional education because the claims that I send in aren't going to be paid for me to serve this underserved person. My staff can't treat these people. I, you know, whatever the reasons are. There are always going to be excuses. It's fine. Pick the one that works for you if you don't want to do anything, but otherwise, an excuse is nothing more than the opposite of a positive choice. We all want to be good people. We're not here because we're not good people. But we all know that the people we serve are also good people, regardless of where they are on the social scale, regardless of how much meth mouth they have, how much, you know, how off the wall they are behavior-wise in the office, all of those things. It's just part and parcel of the world we live in. And my goal, since I deal with fellows and residents on a day-to-day basis, is we need to diversify dentistry and medicine locally. We need to, all of us, go to our dental school and medical school that we went to or graduate school that we went to and say, okay, we have diversity programs here. Wonderful, nice, and we give student aid. Great. Are we recognizing individuals from underserved communities early, during high school, during junior college, before they graduate and go on to a four-year college, supporting them not only through the educational system, but so they can eat, they can study, they have somewhere to sleep that's not their car, so that we give them the tools to go to medical school and dental school, but then they are trained so that they can go home to a culture that accepts them and wants them there and will listen and will trust. That's a small thing. It sounds like it's a big deal. It's not. It's a call. It's a letter to your dental or medical school that says, how are we spending dollars in our diversity program? And how can we help recognize kids from these areas? We're not, instead of parachuting somebody in to a reservation where they have no concept of what the culture is of the people that live there. And we're bringing one of the kids from there and saying, here we go. This is going to be a long, rough ride, but we're here for you and we're going to support you 100% of the way. It's something that's doable. That is doable. So we also, you know, there's a school in Oregon, you know, surprisingly enough, Oregon is underserved and I'm up there working all the time. And I can tell you when I'm in Oregon and Portland, it's one system and it's one kind of environment that I'm in. When I go to Bend, it's very different. It's very different. And access to care across the board is different, different people, different doctors, everything. So recognizing that and having communities serve that, pick kids coming out of colleges or in junior colleges who really want to go into medicine, find them, get them the tutorials or the mentorships that they need so they can get the grades to get into the schools that they have. That's one step. And that's something we can all do, is to support a student. Something I want you to think about, which maybe you haven't. We're all getting hit up for alumni giving. All of us are. Do we know where our alumni dollars go? No, we don't. And I'm not paying for a cocktail party, thank you. Not doing it. I want to make sure that the money I donate to my college, to my grad school, to my dental or medical school is earmarked for support of diversity. Specifically. And if they won't do that, then they don't get the money. Interestingly enough, that will help force them into thinking about how they spend the dollars that are being brought in to develop the colleges, medical schools, and dental schools. It's a small thing. So beyond that, when you're talking about, I don't take insurance, or if I sign on to Medicaid, then I'm going to have 9,000 calls on Monday. My name's going to go in a book. And that happened to our practice when we started taking Medicare and we were doing oral appliances and we became a Medicare in-network provider. Phone rang 1,000 times a day. And everybody wants, it's so overwhelming. The people at the front desk, their eyes are popped out. So if you choose that you don't want to do that, that's okay. It's okay. What you do though, is you all have, everybody has a family or an individual in their practice that these are just great folks. Great folks. And I believe in compassionate care. I believe compassionate care is very different than giving away care. You recognize this individual for the person that they are. Yes, they're struggling. Yes, they have disease or issue A, B, C, D. They've got social problem A, B, C, D, but, and they need whatever. But your recognition of that and your saying, we have a compassionate care program. It's not something, it is something that we do for people that we believe are going to take the small thing that we do. You make that father of a large family who works on an assembly line, that oral appliance, you just make it for him. And you send him home and you show him that, okay, we're going to follow you every month. We're going to make sure you're kind of watching your diet and we're keeping a sleep log. You're doing whatever you need to do so that you can really feel better, so that you can take care of your family better. You work better, but you're going to, you have the ability to touch, to be the next ripple on the wave with the people that you touch in the community, yourself. That's the gift. And the payoff is to see how that one individual blossoms. It doesn't mean 5,000 people come banging on your door wanting the same. It's something that is individual to your practice. You choose a family, large number of family with a lot of kids, carries. You decide, look, these people are trying to do everything right. They're trying to work in the community and do right things. But this is something that's standing in their way. Can I fix that? Of course you can. You can choose to do that one thing. Choose to do that one health talk at your kid's grammar school or the grandchild's grammar school or whatever. Give out a bunch of free brushes or whatever. Doesn't cost a lot. It's your time and your heart. And the consistency of your doing it is what's going to make the difference in the long run. It's a choice. And I think all of us want to choose well. We don't need to go big or go home. We just need to start. We just need to start. See what's in front of us. Actually look at it. And then the one thing I tell my patients all the time, because I get everything. I see everything. I hear everything. There isn't, nobody can shock me anymore. Not anymore. And I just tell them, this is where you are today, and there's no judgment. I'm not here to judge you. I'm here to help you. And, you know, and that's where I started.
I have two stories that I want. I have two stories that I want that Phil and you are going to help me with. One is I got a call from somebody. They just finished a study showing that when you do something in kids to help establish better nasal breathing, their ADHD symptoms go away. And I remember a long time ago, Phil, you said, and something I never thought about, one of the things that leads to poor nasal breathing and better mouth breathing is the frequency in which you're able to do the laundry and clean your sheets. You remember that? Tell me that. Share with the audience that story about that. That's in your book, right?
Yeah, part of it's in there. It was a reference to a family that did not do a lot of laundry, so they did not do a lot of sheet cleaning, and of course they had not bed bugs, but they had the their airways were always moisture. So, yeah, dust mites. The dust mites were always an issue, and they couldn't figure out why. Why they just couldn't have these different things, why they had the breathing issues and why the problems. And so I just had a conversation and said, hey, you know, how often do you wash your sheets? Well, I don't know. Well, And do you have carpet on the floor? Do you have very thick curtains? And this, nah, I don't know about that. So finally got them to convince this one family to do, to wash the sheets, wash the sheets on a regular basis. And amazingly, a lot of their problems went away. It just changed. Now, that didn't solve the airway issues, but at least it addressed that the dust mites and the issues they were having around that, those little critters.
So I will bet that hardly anybody, if anybody who's on this call, asks their patients how often they clean their wash their bed sheets. Establishing nasal breathing is something that everybody, no matter what your discipline of your practice is, dentist, myofunctional therapist, physical therapist, you can all do something to help create better nasal breathing. And there are a lot of the things that can be done don't cost any money. So I think that's something. And the other thing about identifying people in need, remember, Pat, we were talking about how some people need two or three times as much anesthesia as other people. You know,
yes,
and
yes.
We were talking about that. And usually, if you find somebody who needs so much more anesthesia, usually there's some other drug use that they're doing. And, you know, people don't necessarily share that. It doesn't have to be drugs. It could be alcohol. So if anybody has patients who they find, God, I have to give them two or three copules of anesthetic in order to treat them, ask them, because people will never share something if they think they're going to be judged and be a problem. But opening up about that could help them. And a lot of people turn to drug use because of a sleep problem, which then again makes the sleep problem worse. And then it just becomes worse. And so these are just some of the things we're going to cover at upcoming webinars like that. And I would love everybody to share whether you think this is of value, whether you'll come back, you'll bring your friends. So type this while we're answering a couple more questions. Just type your thoughts into our chat box. Steve, you have something to say?
I want to bring up something that one of our attendees brought up, and I just love this thought. And Nalima, if you're okay with talking about this, unmute your microphone, or Howie, if you can give Nalima Patel a microphone. She's writes in here, I spend my time on diet, sleep, and breathing for patients who do not have any dollar value in an insurance-controlled dental practice, but humanity is better for me, and it works. I love this thought, because clearly this dentist is placing the health of the community over the dollars and cents, and that's something we have to do. But as you know, business owners, we have to keep dollars and cents in mind. So the challenge is, and it's a doable challenge, is figure out how you can make talking to people about breathing and sleeping and nutrition part of your everyday practice, and not ruin your practice. And there's ways to do that.
Yeah, I'm trying to get Nalima on. She's a little wheel is spinning. Oh, you're on. Nalima, if you, on the top of your screen, there's like a little blue icon for the microphone. If you click on that, it'll make your microphone live. And then we can hear what you have to say, because what a great message. And I'm sure it will sound better in person. So if you can, on top of your computer screen, there are little icons, and then the one on the furthest most to the left is a microphone. Can you click that? All right, let's see while she tries to work that out. Is there another question?
Well, not a lot of questions, but I'll ask people to write down what they do. And Karen Solis is a PT and a PRIPT, which is, you know, great. And we have a lot of PTs in AAPMD. And she remarks that.
Oh, here's Nalima. Nalima, okay. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. Good evening, everybody. I The reason I put that message, I work on a patient and I do so many free services and I go support myself to the people who don't have money. But when you spend time explaining patient how to breathe properly, where your tongue position should be, you show them in their mouth that they what is the sleep apnea problem or they have an issue. Sometimes I have to ask mother the odd questions about bed wetting or ask the adult patients about how many times they go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. And most of the time they think, oh, this is I'm tired or I drank too much water. And I have to explain them how the brain and a heart and a kidney messaging each other and ask waking you up to go to the bathroom. And I spend a lot of time every appointment, and even though I feel myself I'm not very successful in getting that message to so many of my patients, and I recently lost one patient, I had literally begged her to go to the physician so many times for sleep study. She went finally on Friday. All they did is change her blood pressure medication. 48 hours later on, she died in sleep. So insurance doesn't allow us. We spend this much time, but they pay very little. But I still don't consider that one. I feel like it's an obligation of mine to convey the message as many people as I can. And every visit, I try to enforce that idea. So probably if I try 100 times, probably 10, 15 times, it may work. But I'm not going to give up. And I think that's the way I continue practice dentistry as long as I can.
Nalima, where are you located?
I am in California. I practice in Temple City. I lost my own office in pandemic, but I work with the, I moved my practice in the other practice, but I still work. I still work. And for me, this webinar was of more importance because I came from India being a woman, and I was the first generation woman allowed to go to school, and I became a dentist in my family. And there is so much social injustice in India and still going on in India for girls and women. And I'm still working over there, so that's why I'm working in two continents, because I had also suffered over here when I used to work in a group practice, and I've seen what was going in India as well. So I was looking forward for this webinar.
Lima, your patients are very lucky to have you in your community. They're very fortunate, which is great. You know, we were talking about what do you do? You know, what can we do to make a difference? First, identify the people that are having a problem. And I like what you said, Pat, about compassionate care, you know, rather than giving something away. If providing care, there are people who really, really need it, and not only going to need it, but are going to really do their job. They'll be a partner. Because you're treating airway, you know the patient has to be a partner in care. You know, maybe once a month, do free screenings for people in your area. You know, that on O2 Day, a couple of years ago on O2 Day, we asked people to donate services, whether it's screening or and put a value on it or give away a case. And we got close to $200,000 in donated services. I'm thinking we should do that again this year. Last night on our webinar, I spoke to Renata from the Airway Circle, and she volunteered to be part of a committee to do that. You know, imagine if we have 1,000 AAPMD members, and each one does 5 or 10 screenings a month. You know. It'll make a difference, and it doesn't have to be dentists. It can be physical therapists and things like that. And you people don't know Phil Cooper, but he is amazing. He should be retired, but he's not. And aside from running a nationwide midnight basketball game, which really isn't about basketball, it's about giving people, kids, a place to go and hang out. So he organized that. In addition to that, he works in a clinic. How many people do you see a day, Phil?
In the clinic, that's just a half morning, probably about 15 to 20, from 8 to 12.
And we were talking about trying to get more airway identified in his clinic. And I said I would help him by writing something from both the AAPMD and from the foundation and sharing the research of why this is so important. Sometimes it seems like there's a lot of resistance. We're not making a lot of headway, but seeing, you know, Pat, you worried about people being on this webinar. Nobody left. And anybody who's on this webinar, you were here at the beginning of something new, exciting, and special. So you can mark this date and say that you were there from the very beginning.
Here's a good idea that Yubhua Chang wrote up there. He says, what about using social media instead of chairside time? So what if we took a moment to take your phone out and record a little PSA? And on your website, instead of just having, you know, nice testimonials from your patients about what a great office you are, which belong on your website, what if you did PSAs about nutrition, about screening for breathing, about taking care of a little child means a lifetime of better health? You know, little PSAs like that can make a big difference for you, and that gets the message out as well.
Thank you.
It's a great idea. It's a great idea. And really try thinking about how, instead of giving away care, instead of, you know, because the perception of the person on the receiving end, you have to be mindful of cultural, social, emotional, receptive. You know, how do people receive this? But when you look at it as something that is, if this is what we do because you're not obligated to do it. It's the right thing to do, but it needs to be the right thing to do for the right person and couched in such a way so that they feel like that you are, they're a part of it. They have skin in the game because you're investing in their future with yourself. The gift is whatever, not the service.
And whatever we do as a practitioner for this type of care, the patient has to do at least as much, do their share. So choosing the right patient who is going to be motivated to appreciate that you're sharing your care, then they're going to do their work. But we've all had great successes with where we've helped people get care, and then the other thing, which and you come on the second Monday night to Endeavor meetings, because getting the care early is much less expensive than getting it later. I treat mostly adults. Put me out of business. I don't care. I would love to be put out of business. I really don't have to worry about that, but that should be the goal, that nobody grows up with a problem that should have been identified and treated when they were 2 or 3 years old. Pat, you can have the double last word tonight, because you're both the presenter and the co-host. And I think I don't know how you felt about it. I thought this was absolutely wonderful.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for coming. Please make sure that you look at the AAPMD website. If you haven't become a member as yet, please do so. Each and every one of these webinars is free to you to watch over and over again or at your leisure. You can look at slides. You can get information. Look at the CoLab Cures. Go online. Make sure that you find something of interest to yourself so we can see you in Arizona in the fall. And come back on Wednesday nights and on Monday nights, and we'll really make this special for you because it's about you. So come on back, and we'll look forward to seeing you.
Bill, did I hear you whisper something about wanting to volunteer to do a webinar for us about this?
just like that invitation I got to speak at in Phoenix that I didn't know about. Yeah, well, we can do that. There's a couple things,
okay.
So we'll talk about it.
No, I mean, we need to really get the extent of this problem out into the world. So thank you. And thank you, Steve, for joining us. Mm-hmm. And the cherry blossoms are out in Seattle.
They are.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Right.
Gorgeous. Beautiful.
Thank you all. Good night. And we'll see you at the next webinar.
Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye, Pat.